Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionhydration.com. Electrolytes in different strengths that match how you sweat. You can get 15% off your first order with the code OXYGENADDICT15. So welcome to the show. I hope you're all doing well. It's been a couple of weeks since I've managed to get a show out. I have got an interview this week for you with Taylor Nibb, who won the recent WTCS race in Yokohama, securing her slot for the Olympics on the American squad. So it's great to catch up with her. She's a really fun, really lively, full of energy person. Very young as well still, so you can really hear the excitement in her voice as she's being interviewed. And it's great to catch somebody for an interview while they're still in the throes of almost disbelief that they've managed to qualify for the Olympic Games. So watch out for that coming up later on. Few results then that we've had since the last time that we spoke. We'll start with the WTCS race in Yokohama. I think it was always going to be an interesting race to see who turned up in form, who turned up in shape, who turned up going well. On the ladies' side, I don't think anybody would have called Taylor Nibb to win this, but she gave a masterclass. She broke away on the bike with Maya Kingma, and she's a super, super strong biker. You'll hear in her interview, she talks about how, you know, she's obviously very, very driven, and she's very keen to find even the smallest of what you or I would consider weaknesses in her performance. She absolutely dominated. She rode away from the pack with Maya Kingma, and she credits Maya as being better through the technical sections. She was super, super strong though on the bike, and several times it looked to me like she could just have ridden away from Maya Kingma. Didn't do run away with it on the run, and in her own words, she didn't believe it till she crossed the finish line. But there we go. She took the win and she secured that first slot. The Americans' policy was if you got on the podium, you got a slot for the Olympics. And so she did that in fine style. We had Summer Rappaport from America come through for second. She already had her Olympic slot from winning the test event last year. And Maya Kingma held on for third. Taylor Spivey had a really strong race. She came through from the USA to finish in fourth place. I think she was about 20 seconds away from catching Maya Kingma. She, bless her, had a nightmare. She'd lost all her baggage, didn't arrive. Her bike didn't arrive. She did the entire race in borrowed kit and on a borrowed bike. So hideous, hideous race experience for her. And of course, now the Americans are in the position where both Taylor Spivey and Katie Zafiras are currently not selected, not qualified for the Olympics. Both of them potential medalists, both of them potential gold medalists at the Olympics, but only one of them can go. A lot of you will have read in the press, Katie Zafiras tragically lost her father to a very sudden and unexpected illness just a month ago. She finished back in 22nd, I think. So, you know, my thoughts and prayers go out to her and her family, and God bless her for even getting herself on the start line under those circumstances. So it remains to be seen what the Americans do in terms of selection for their final third spot on that side. Other results in the ladies' race, we had Sophie Caldwell from Great Britain. She finished in sixth. Non Stanford finished in seventh. Another notable race is there. Cassandra Beaugrand finished down in 10th. Now, a lot of you will know her name. She raced really well out in the Super League races, and she is certainly favoured to win a medal, if not the gold medal, in the relay race out at the Olympics. So she's extremely quick over the shorter distances, very, very good swimmer, very, very quick runner over 5K. Maybe is lacking just a little bit of endurance at the moment over the Olympic distance, but she's definitely a name to watch that I think you'll be seeing at the Olympics. Over on the men's side, well, it was pretty much a domination by Christian Blumenfeld. He got away in a pack of three onto the run. There was him, there was Yella Gaines from Belgium, and Alex Yee of Great Britain running side by side. Rumours got to me that Alex Yee had stomach problems on the run, basically desperately needed the Portaloo and did incredibly well to hold it together to even finish. So that was him going. I had him, this is his race to take, he's away with three. I thought in a straight out foot race, he'd take both Yella Gaines and Christian Blumenfeld. But with these stomach upset problems, if those rumours to be believed, then he's done incredibly well to get himself to the finish line there. As it happens, Christian Blumenfeld broke away. Yella Gaines took second. And then Morgan Pearson from America ran through into third. And again, he's secured himself a slot at the Olympics there because of finishing on the podium. I did a bit of research into him. He's a really good runner, an ex track runner. During lockdown, he ran, if you can get this, he ran a 1:02 half marathon. So this guy can really shift. And again, tragic story from Morgan's past. He lost his elder brother a few weeks before the race. So he did incredibly well to even get himself up to the finish line. And there's some very moving interviews with him at the finish talking about how he raced with, feeling the shadow of his big brother standing next to him. So my heart goes out to him, and it's fantastic to see him qualified for the Olympics. Very hopeful of getting him onto the show as well for an interview soon. Other interesting results there. Henry Schumann held on for fifth place, beating Vincent Louis of France into sixth. Now, this is the first sign of a chink in Vincent's armour that we've seen in the past 2 years, pretty much. He's looked unbeatable and untouchable. So very interesting to see him here. You know, you can never read too much into these early season races. I think Christian Blumenfeld is going to take a huge amount of confidence from beating him. But I've always thought Vincent's he's a big day, big game player. So he's going to bring his best out to Tokyo. We had Martin van Riel in seventh, Leo Berger in eighth. Gustav Iden missed that front pack on the bike. His swim was a bit slower than he would have liked. I think he pulled an incredibly strong leg on the bike, as always, and ran himself through into ninth place. So good result for him there, finishing 10th. And then on the British side, we had Tom Bishop in 22nd and Johnny Brownlee in 23rd. Now, interesting to me that Johnny Brownlee finished a place behind Tom Bishop. The situation that the Brits are in is that Tom Bishop needs to get himself into the top 30 in the rankings overall for Great Britain to have three men in the individual race. If we don't have three men in the individual race, we've obviously only got two there, and we need two for the relay. And my take on this is it would be madness to not take Alex Yee for that second slot with our eyes on a relay place, because he is by far and away the best shot we've got there of running us through onto the podium. I think everyone would see his foot speed there as being a massive, massive bonus. But it puts Tom Bishop in this interesting position. He's racing to get that third slot qualified by finishing in 30th. And it's incredibly likely that the Brits will pick Ali Brownlee, if he's injury free, for that third slot, just because of the guy that he is. And I really feel for Tom Bishop. Imagine he's racing all around the world to try and get this third place qualified. And certainly in my opinion, that slot is very unlikely to go to him, barring anything happen to Ali Brownlee. So it remains to be seen what happens there. I've wondered whether Johnny Brownlee finished deliberately just behind Tom Bishop to give Tom Bishop an extra few ranking points to help him move as much up the table as he possibly can. Obviously, 22nd isn't really going to do a massive amount to move himself up the table, but it's certainly better than being outside the top 30. So as we go forward into the next WTCS races, we've got Leeds coming up on the 5th and 6th. We've then got, let's see what else is coming up after that. There's another one, if I remember rightly. We've got Hamburg on the 10th of July before we go to the Olympics. So I believe those are the only two WTCS races that are going to happen before the Olympics happen. So we need a blinder from Tom Bishop to try and get that third place registered for us for the Olympics. So let's see what happens there. Next race that was up following weekend was the WTC, the World Cup race in Lisbon. Interestingly, we had wins there. We had Nicola Spirit come back. She had an absolute domination. She had an incredibly strong run, and she is clearly in fantastic shape, and no one is going to count against her. She's double Olympic medalist already. She's definitely going to be one of the favourites for the medal out in Tokyo. She had a great race. Fantastic race as well. Many of you will know this name, Carolyn Hayes from Ireland. She's been an athlete I've followed for several years on the back of, she was sponsored by Planet X, I think, back in the day from memory. Class athlete, and she had a storming race to take second. Kirsten Kasper of the USA took third. We had Vicky Holland in fifth place there. So that was the ladies' race. And then over on the men's race, it was another win for Christian Blumenfeld, backing up from the week before. So he's clearly in great shape, loves to race. Again, a fantastic race from him because he absolutely smashed it halfway through the run. And he races the run like a runner, does he? Puts surges in, puts really big spurts in the middle of the race, and it makes the racing really exciting. I would love to see him off the bike with the front pack in Tokyo because he's going to go full guns blazing to break the pack apart. It's going to be really exciting racing. We had Max Studler of Switzerland. Again, hats off to him. He had a cracking run and he really stuck with Blumenfeld even through the surges. So another one to watch there. And Jonas Grau of Spain in third place. Jonas Gomberg finished fourth. Then we had Gordon Benson from the UK in sixth. Gustav Iden finished back down in eighth ahead of Martin Van Riel and Mario Moller. Tom Bishop was a DNF, as was Grant Sheldon. And then other big races, we had Ironman Tulsa taking place, the North American Championship. So absolutely stacked field. And as always, the race never plays out the way you think it's going to in these massive championship races. There were something like 50 or 60 names, a lot of them big names down on the start list and racing. And it was a full-on, full-gas race right from the start, both on the men's and the women's side. On the women's side, the race was made especially interesting. Daniela Ryf put a massive bike performance in and had herself, I think she had herself a 15-minute lead off the bike, if my mind, yes, I think so, 50, or maybe even 20 minutes off the bike. And let's get this mass right, it must have been 15 minutes she had off the bike. Kat Matthews ran herself up. She had an absolutely storming run. Kat had been given a 5-minute penalty for either, you know, a drafting infringement or a blocking infringement. I'm not sure which. She took the 5 minutes at the start of the run and she looked absolutely fantastic. Again, Kat Matthews, off the back of her race that she had the back end of last year out at Ironman Florida, really, really strong run. This time, she looked like she was out for a training run. She looked really relaxed. Her form was fantastic all the way through. She ran 2:49 for what I believe is either the second or third fastest ever ladies marathon in an Ironman, which is unbelievable. And get this, she ended up on the line 5 minutes and 1 second behind Daniela Ryf after serving a 5-minute stand down penalty. I think Daniela Ryf, her marathon from memory was it 3:05? But she did not look a 3. Hang on, here we go. I'm trying to nosy through the results as I'm talking to you here. I think it was a 3:05 or a 3:10 marathon that she ran, but she didn't look good the whole way through. She looked like she was really working for it. She looked absolutely ruined at the finish, completely spent. And it would have been very interesting to see. It's easy for people to say, well, she had more in the tank and she did what she had to take the win. I'm not convinced that she did on that day, looking at how she looked. I think if it had come down to a foot race in the last couple of miles with Kat Matthews closing so quickly, it would have been a very interesting race indeed. So Kat, hats off to you. You've taken another step forward there in your performance. Daniela Ryf takes the win in 8:40. Kat Matthews in 8:45. Skye Mensch held on for third in 8:47. Then it was Heather Jackson. We had Sarah Crowley in sixth, Ruth Astle in seventh, Kimberly Morrison in eighth, and Tara Grosvenor in ninth there. Over on the men's side, well, a storming return to form for Patrick Langer. I've got to take my hat off to the guy. He ran 2:36.03. No, he didn't. 2:36.30 to take the win. And he just looked dominant the entire day. He was at the front of the swim. He led the swim for a while. He was certainly in the first three out of the water. He swam, I think, from memory, a 47 or a mid 47. He then rode 4:17. And he then ran 2:36 something off the bike. And he looked like it was a walk in the park. He looked like he was nose breathing the whole way through. It's a massive shot across the bows to all his competitors. And I know he's not a very well-liked athlete amongst a lot of armchair keyboard warriors. But I have to say, I was really, really impressed with him. I was really impressed with the way he was doing turns on the front on the bike, and don't let anyone tell you that he wasn't. He was pulling for as long and as hard as anybody else. It was not a blue train being pulled by domestiques, and he ran the whole thing on his own, looking absolutely fantastic. Jan van Berkel had a great run to come through for second. Daniel Backegaard held on for third. Hats off to Denis Chevreau in fourth. He ran 2:36.03 to take fourth place there. So that is one of the fastest runs I've heard of. It might be the fastest run, actually. I'd have to check the record books on that, but certainly not many have run faster than that. That sub 6 minute miling, which is incredibly good running, you know, even for an open marathon. Really impressive stuff. Bart Arnault and Joe Skipper ran together for a while. Joe apparently had a crash. Joe hit a pothole and came off and properly went over the bars and came down. And Joe being Joe, got up, shook himself off and got back on and caught his gang again. And reading from his Instagram post, he did a lot of the work on his bike. He was very annoyed at the end that, you know, people were sitting in and not doing their turns. And if you're interested, go and find his Instagram account and have a read about that. The power numbers he talks about, the difference for him riding, leading the train and pulling and sitting back third or fourth wheel when he was not on the front, was a large amount of wattage indeed. So real shame that he's had that crash there. Still a great performance for him. He still ran 2:45 off the bike, which is awesome. I know he's been disappointed in his last couple of runs at 70.3s. But imagine that, you go 7:57 and you only get sixth place. I think the top eight men went sub 8 hours in this race. So it just shows how the standard has moved on. Adam Bowden was 16th in his first full distance race, 8:18. So, you know, storming performance for your first Ironman. Let's not take anything away from the guy. That's amazing. And Colin Norris was in 35th there in 9:59. So some great racing. It's nice to be able to talk about race results again. It looks to me like a lot of people have moved their game on over the pandemic. There's a lot of very, very fast times and a lot of very fast runs. And the days of, you know, the men running 7:50, running 2:50 and being able to take a win, they're long gone. It's now looking like you've got to run under 2:40 to take a win in any of the bigger races. So I look forward to seeing how these races pan out. Upcoming races this weekend, we've got Challenge St. Poulton. That's a half distance race. I won't go through who's racing there because there's like 80 pro men and 50 pro women racing. And then there's also the Spanish long distance championships in Girona. Joe Skipper's down to race there. Whether he'll show or not, I wouldn't bet against him, knowing Joe. Cam Wirth is down to race amongst Iñigo Llanas and many others as well. Sam Laidlow's down to race as well. I know he was disappointed that he had a crash in Gran Canaria, so it'd be great to see how he goes. Roman Guillaume's racing, so there's some good fast guys racing there. Nikki Bartlett's down on the start line. The ladies race, Emma Billum. So some good names. It'd be interesting to see how they go over there. Okay, so there's our race results. It's nice to have those to talk over. Before we go to our interview of the week, I'd like to encourage you to check out our sponsors, Precision Hydration. I think these guys produce the best all-round electrolyte products that are out there. I love them. If you're struggling with cramps on the bike or the treadmill or the indoor trainer, Precision Hydration in your bottle often goes a long way to just solving that straight away. That's been my experience. And more importantly, electrolytes are absolutely essential to maintaining your fluid balance. It's not just about drinking water. We need to have the right balance of sodium, potassium, and all that in there to help transport that water into your body. So if you've not tried it before, get 15% off your first order with the code OXYGENADDICT15 and check out their website, precisionhydration.com, where they've got a great online sweat test that you can take as a kind of an online questionnaire there. All right, so this week's interview of the week is with Taylor Nibb. Taylor has just qualified for her first Olympics, racing for the USA with her win at WTCS Yokohama. All right, we've got Taylor with us on the show. Taylor, first up, congratulations. You are going to the Olympic Games. How does that feel?
It feels great, but thanks for having me.
Well, it's awesome. We were just having a laugh before. I've been having a real challenge getting people for interviews recently, like loads of people, their management have got them locked down and it's like no one's doing interviews till after Tokyo. And I thought it's got to be worth a cheeky DM to Instagram. And there we go. We can cut the middleman out, which is great. So don't tell your management that you're doing this until after it comes out. It'd get me in trouble.
Well, don't worry. I can tell my management because I don't have any. So we're good. I'm management, so I control it.
Surely that's about to change though, right?
We'll see. I don't want to change anything in the next 2 months, So for now, it's all good. And right now I actually would have been in like deep final exam period for school. So if 30 minutes or 45 minutes of a conversation versus intense studying or exam taking is a lot less stress. So my baseline, nice. It's a good,
helpful. Hey, but you know, I'm now thinking I could use this as a carrot to some of the managers who won't get other interviews set up and say, look, I know someone who needs management and she's going to the Olympics.
If you want to.
it might be a double win for you. All right. Well, seriously, let's rewind a little bit here then. So last weekend, Yokohama, the situation in the US team is if you finish on the podium, you're going to the Olympics. Summer Rapoport's already got her slot because did she win the test event in Tokyo? No, she podiumed though, didn't she?
No, she was fifth after the British disqualification. So she was seventh across the line, but fifth in the results.
So it was first American on the day got in after the test event, was it?
And if she had actually been on the podium, Taylor Spivey would have qualified because she was within the top eight. So that's where it's also tough. It's our very exciting and very specific selection criteria.
Well, I thought I was doing well keeping up with it, but clearly I had not. I got it all completely wrong as well.
But it was also different from the men versus the women in Yokohama this year because the women had one woman qualified. So you had to be top American in top three to qualify, but the men, you only, quote unquote, had to be top eight and first American to automatically qualify.
Got you. Okay. Well, in America, you've kind of got the same problem that the British ladies have got, which is that, you know, you could potentially be the fourth strongest triathlete in the world and not get to go to the Olympics.
Yeah. Well, if you look at it, I think there are three countries that have three women qualified, and that's the British, the Americans, and the Italians. And I'm not sure about the British, but I know the Americans right now, as of today, May 24th, have six in the top 30. So if we were two countries, like if we were not East and West United States, we'd have three qualified in for both, which is, that means that we'd be the fourth strongest in the world as a second, a B country.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? So going into the race then, what expectations did you have? Because we've lived through, you know, the craziest time in modern history in terms of everything, but in terms of athletic performance races, there's not been a real amount to do over the past year anyway. And I was reading before the interview, you've had injury challenges over the last year anyway, haven't you?
Well, yeah. So last year was unprecedented. But I think that, so I got an injury last year. I tore a tendon in my foot and I took time off, and so I had no expectations going into the race. I wanted to do well. I wanted to put together a good race, but I didn't know. But if you look at the historically, I think I probably had a bit more to go off of than other people, because you've seen people like Vicky Holland, for example. She was injured most of 2017, I think it was. And then she goes and wins the world championship in 2018. And same with women who might take a year off to give birth to a child. They can come back and be stronger than ever. So I wasn't so worried about taking time off, because you've seen people come back from that. It's the like 50 hours a week of training that I don't know how that translates a year later. But who knows, in 5 years, we might say you needed to put together like 2000 hours of training in 2020 to have a good 2025. Yeah. So I didn't have a big training year last year, and I don't know if that's helped me now.
Yeah. Okay. And so going into the race, did you have any expectations of a performance, or did you have any benchmarks even from training, or was it really just to kind of go out and give it everything you've got kind of shot?
The goal was to execute just a good swim, bike, and run. And that's always my goal. I haven't done that so well, especially in 2019. So it was hard to get focused. And I just focused on like what I could do. But yeah, so expectations wise, no, there weren't really any. I just wanted to put together a good race in my book.
Okay. And then I've didn't get to see all of it. I've seen the highlights that were up on YouTube that the WTCS put up. It looked like you and Maya Kingma pretty much just put the hammer down and went, and that was it. P- people looked around and they looked up and you'd got 10 seconds and they kind of looked at each other and you had 20 seconds and that was it, game over, which really surprised me because, I mean, not common sense, but we think there's no way two people are going to outrun the whole pack. It just doesn't make any logical sense, does it? But either they didn't get organized or you guys were just too strong for them.
Yeah, if you've ever been in the pack in a race, some people don't like to do any work. Like there's some races where I'll be in this pack and then I am like, if I haven't gone back, like beyond the fifth person, and then transition two will come up and I'm like, wait a second, you were here the whole time? You were just like intense the whole time. Like there are girls who are really good at sitting in. And there are a certain number of girls who you can trust will do work, but some of them weren't in Yokohama and it just depends on the day. And it's harder when there's a gap. And also, I don't know what they were thinking. So you never know.
You just started riding and looked around and you had a gap and you just kept on going and that was it, huh?
Well, yeah, actually. So I've learned now that we broke away when the groups came together. But I was just, the group was catching up to us. The British coaches have very good communication for their athletes. And I saw that the group was like 20 seconds back and I looked back and I'm like, I can see them. That's not good. And so I'm like, I don't want to let people back into the race. And so I just like went and then all of a sudden it's just Maya and I, and I'm like, oh, well that's a pleasant surprise. And I definitely felt like I held her back during the technical sections, but it was great to have her there. And it was great to work with at least one person. I could have used like one or two others, but I'll take it.
But she said a similar thing. She said you worked really well because she kind of helped you on the technical sections and then you pulled really strong on the flats and the sort of the long drag type sections as well. So in a way, I guess having someone who complements your strengths works really well, doesn't it?
Yeah. And because there were just two of us, it was just kind of like do the work or get dropped.
Yeah.
And so there wasn't really a choice. And I feel like in the race, girls can get squirrely and it's like, I don't want to pull. I'm going to save for the run. And so instead we were just like, just on it and no thinking, just doing. And that's sometimes the best way to race.
Did you have a feeling for whether you could outrun Maya before the race, like in terms of form and stuff like that? Were you fancying your chances to outrun her or was it going to always be a bit of a battle almost?
I wasn't really thinking about that because the U.S. selection was just you had to be the top American on the podium. So actually, when we came around the turnaround and I was running with Maya, it was the first turnaround on the lap, and I saw Summer was the first person. I'm like, okay, well, Summer can catch me because she already has her spot. So I just need third. Like, I just can't let anyone else get in. But so probably not the way you should be thinking because – you should be going to every race wanting to win or thinking you can to give yourself a chance. But it was more just do what I had to do on the day if I wanted to go to Tokyo, which was a stretch. It was a big stretch.
And what point did you realize you had it wrapped up then? I think you broke away from Maya about the 5 or 6K mark from what I saw.
I think because it was the end of the first lap. But
okay.
Yeah. It was when I crossed the line. It's not over till it's over. Like you just never know what's going to happen in a race. And some people can celebrate early. I'm not that kind of person. I'm like, get me across that line and just done. Like close the deal.
And has it sunk in yet then? It looked like at the time it hadn't really sunk in. Summer came across the line and you were a bit like, what just happened?
Yeah. Yes, it's very exciting and I'm very grateful for it. I think, it was just a great opportunity, but there are more races to come. I'm glad that Lisbon's already happened. Like there's a new news cycle in. And so we're moving on to the next races.
Yeah. What else have you got lined up before you go to Tokyo? Are you coming over to do Leeds?
I'm hoping to.
Okay.
With the strict bubble, I'm flying in kind of late and flying out quickly. So if a bad biker or bag doesn't make it, it'll be hard to race, but I'm doing what I can. So we'll see.
Well, Taylor had that, not you, the other Taylor Spivey had that problem in Yokohama, didn't she? Was it her, everything didn't arrive? No bike, no bags, nothing.
Yeah. And I could not imagine.
Ah, that's a heartbreaker for her, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tough. And it just can happen any race, anytime you're traveling with so much stuff. So
of course. Yeah. So in terms of your training group that you're with, again, I did a little bit of training before, a little bit of reading before. You've got a new group that you've been training with, and it includes, let me get this right, you're training with Kirsten Casper, you're training with Matt McElroy. Mm-hmm. How much has that helped you? Because I know you graduated university, graduated Cornell, is that right?
Yep.
So you've kind of gone from the sort of the university environment to the, well, now I guess I'm a full-time triathlete kind of thing. How is it in the sort of the triathlon full-time training bubble? How's it different?
Well, it's very different because, like, I'm done with training, and then unless I have something like this, I'm done for the day. When before it was kind of like my day was booked minute by minute from the time I woke up to the time I went to bed. Like, I loved meal time because that was the time where I could actually turn my brain off. And training was awesome too because it was just like a de-stressor. But so it's very different, but I'm enjoying the extra recovery, still learning. So I think actually it's probably an advantage for me because this was always going to be a transition year. I knew, like, I was ending university, and so regardless of what I did, it was going to be a transition. So to enter into the state of the world, yes, it's hard in some respects, but I have nothing to compare to. So, like, flying in late for Yokohama, I guess we flew in late, relatively speaking. We landed Tuesday. The race was Saturday. I was used to that because that's what I had to do because you can't miss a lot of classes, or at least I couldn't. So it was more similar to me than different. But so I guess it's an advantage in some respects.
And what have your old friends from university and your old classmates, what's their reaction been to you making the team?
Well, they're very excited, but I don't want them to jinx me. So
are you a superstitious person? Are you the stuff like that? Right. Okay.
Very much so. It's not over till it's over. You haven't done it. Done it. It's I like to actually like just complete things and then we can.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, that you were injured last year and you would have missed the Olympics had it been 2020.
Well, I got injured in end of June. So things had already looked different for the past few months. I was training a bit differently.
Sure.
Should have, could have, would have, never know, but it was a different.
Totally. Yeah, okay. And so going into the Olympics then, what's your approach to it? Are you just going along and thinking whatever happens, happens? Or have you got a bit of a race plan? Or how do you see the race unfolding, I guess? Who do you see your competition being?
Well, that's hard to say. I feel like we'll learn a lot more in Leeds just on how people are racing. But I think talk to me on July 28th and how the race went, because you just never know. Because so I love studying the sport. I'm a huge fan of the sport. And if you watch it, like, some people can have uncharacteristically good swims or just poor performances. And it's just like, every race is kind of a roll of the dice to see what happens. But I feel like the Olympics just adds so many extra variables. And this year, there's nothing to compare it to because it'll be a different games from any other before. So just added another variable to mix it up even more. So I don't think you can say until it happens. And I also know that like, if you look at Rio, the top 10 women, I think only one qualified in like that year. Everyone else had qualified in 2015. So, but it's different this year because who qualified in 2020? Everyone either qualified in 2019 or now 2021. So it'll be just a little different. And it tends to, if you look at the top medal performances, it can take an Olympics or two to nail it. So, like, add in that variable too, and you just don't know what you're going to get. So I want to keep that open.
Well, I'm really stoked that you made it, because I think someone who swims well like you do, and...
Well, sometimes. I've had a fair number of bad swims.
If you have a good swim, then we'll say this, right? Someone, more to the point, someone who's really going to give it a dig on the bike. I was always a really big fan growing up of, I mean, we're going back 20-odd years now, but Spencer Smith and guys like that on the bike who would, you know, just really, Michaeli Jones, just not fearless, lay it out, not care who's around them, destroy people. You're that kind of rider. And I think, I mean, you've got history with the breakaway with Flora Duffy as well, haven't you? Back in, was it somewhere in Canada? Was it Montreal?
It was Edmonton in 2017.
Edmonton.
Also, Edmonton, WTS Edmonton 2017, but then in Montreal 2016. But both times she broke away from me on the last lap. So I've not only gotten to ride with her, but gotten attacked by her and dropped. I've gotten the full floor experience.
Hey, but you know what? Most people don't even get to get attacked by Flora because they don't get away with her. So you should give yourself a pat on the back for being there.
Yeah, it still doesn't feel great in the moment.
Oh, bless you. Do you know what? You were like, how old were you at the time? Were you 19 or 18 still?
Yeah, but...
you get away with Flora Duffy and all you remember is that she got away from you at the end. Come on, give yourself some credit.
Yeah, I do have high standards, so yeah. Anywhere can be better.
Well, there's got to be someone puts a dig in on the bike in the Olympics. There always is. There's always a breakaway. There's always going to be favourites looking at each other. Who knows? You might get lucky. You might get away. You might be under the radar, or maybe not under the radar anymore, having won Yokohama. Perhaps you've blown that one, hey?
Yeah, but I feel like, it is what it is. We'll see what happens. Yeah. The other thing is that, like, it will be most likely very hot there. And so who knows how that another variable we'll throw into the mix in terms of just even people might even get away on the bike and then blow up. But
yeah.
Or there's going to be tension on that run. I'm guessing.
So reading back a bit then, your mum was 2014 World Age Group Champion. And it sounds like it sounds like she's dealt out a few bee stings on the bike to you over the years. It sounds like she's fairly strong on the bike. Is that right?
Yeah. So we used to have this game where like we would pick this spot up ahead on the road and it'd be like, she'd be like, okay, Taylor, I'm giving you like 10 seconds. And we just race there. And she'd catch me every time for the first like few months. But then I needed to hold her off. I think it was easier for her to chase me because I'm just like trying to not get caught. But I learned a lot and it was always fun. It was always just like an early morning ride that we'd go on for fun.
That's awesome. So she's been training you from right back in the day to have attacks and try and get away. That's brilliant.
I'm not sure it was training. It was just a game. It was just to wear me out, get me tired. I had a lot of energy.
It does sound like you have a lot of energy going on there. Do you struggle now that you don't have the schoolwork to kind of keep you distracted outside of training?
Yeah, well, I think I'm learning. I'm learning how to relax. I'm learning how to shut off. So something like this is helpful in that I can like channel energy productively, hopefully, or not. Who knows? This might be a performance disadvantage, but I'm learning.
Okay, then, in terms of stuff outside of WTS and the Olympics, have you been watching any of the Super League stuff? And would you fancy giving that a go?
I've definitely been watching it. I haven't been invited, so I need to either qualify or earn an invitation. So I don't know. That might be a stretch.
Well, you've got to be someone who'd make the racing exciting over there, though. Over that, those courses would really suit you. The powerful, it tends to be short courses, lots of corners, short uphills that you can put bursts in. Mac would love to have someone like you splitting the pack up there, I'm sure.
Well, we'll see. I need to work on my handling. And it's a different style of racing. You never know until you race it. And I feel like it's also like, I was watching a lot of the Rotterdam and London, I think the arena games. And that just seems like a whole different sport.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I think the indoor stuff's very different, isn't it? If you get the chance to check out any of the videos of the stuff from like Malta from the year before, I think you would love that. The sort of repeated nature of the swim, bike, run, that'd be right up your personality.
Well, we'll see. You never know until you try that format if you like it. I'm sure it's painful.
In terms of coaching, who are you working with at the moment and how's that working out for you?
So I'm working with Ian O'Brien for my triathlon specific training and then Aaron Carson for my strength. And that's the benefit of being based in the United States and having really a home base is that I can have like a very good team around me and have everything I need right now, at least.
Awesome. And what do you see as your elements that you're trying to improve the most? Because everyone always has something that they're working on. What is it you're working on at the moment?
Everything. I feel like I was well, I mean, like I'm getting used to the training. I'm getting used to recovering and trying to like do what I need to do on each day. Not like focusing on anything beyond that and just improving day by day and week by week and getting in the work. I have a lot of areas for improvement. I'm very harsh. And I wrote I think it was 2,700 word race recap with the points of what I need to get better. So Ian loved it, but there's always a lot to work on. So in every discipline, there are multiple items.
It's interesting that your take on yourself is that everything needs improving, and everyone else's take on you that I've read is Taylor is a complete athlete. She doesn't have a weakness. She's strong in all of the three sports. And I think from a few of the bits I've read from you, you're kind of going, well, I like maybe got third place in the DC Nationals at 200 meters swimming. So I'm not even really a very good swimmer. And then you see it in the context of WTS swimming and go, well, you were just second at the water. That's amazing. So I think it's interesting the amount of drive that you've got to improve. You don't focus on the things you're doing well. You seem to be focused on these are the things I can do to be even better, which is the mark of a real, if not champion, future champion mindset, certainly.
Yeah, we'll see. But also I feel like you can't get complacent in terms of like even the things that I might do well some days, you need to always do them well. So you can't just get lazy in that respect. But actually USAT has like every year, you have to have like a marker of like certain performance attributes and rank yourself on a scale of 1 to 5. And I asked them like, who do you want us? And they had like rank yourself against the best athletes in the world. And so I asked them, I'm like, are we rating ourselves against the best athletes? Like, should I be rating my time trial ability versus Rohan Dennis, the best time trialist in the world, or my swimming against like a Katie Ledecky? Like, are we doing by gender, by discipline? Is it sports? And they're like, well, just do what you think is the best. And I'm like, no, I want to know. Because like, it's different. It's a different rating. But seeing like how triathlon's so fun because yes, there are three disciplines. And you can see how good like a single sport can be. And like, that's the ultimate aim, like to be as good as that in each sport. Now that might be too high a reach, but you never know. So that's.
Well, yeah, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Cause we're starting to see like over in the UK, my mind's gone completely blank. Alex Yee is like a knocking on borderline world-class runner.
Well, same with Beth Potter.
Same with Beth Potter, exactly. I mean, she broke the 5K on the road, certainly, the world record, didn't she? And so we're getting to this point where I remember when I started triathlon, we used to get laughed at by the swimmers, laughed at by the cyclists, and laughed at by the runners. And now it's very different in that, you know, runners are looking at it going, well, that is a world best performance in running from a triathlete. You know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yes. And also I think it's really neat to see that you don't necessarily always have to do things by the book to get similar results. Like exploring kind of like the realms of human possibility, like can you run great times or bike really well or swim really well and not have to do so much of that single discipline. And the single sports can learn a little from the triathletes as well as the triathletes learning from the single sports. But as long as we're still learning and improving, that's what I want to do. But some people are just set in their ways.
Brilliant. Okay, then. So final question. We'll wrap this up with this one. Olympics Day comes around I've got it on the wall, July the 27th, is it, for the ladies?
Yep. 6:30 a.m. it'll be. So it'll be an early morning. I don't think I've raced that early in years.
Is it really? You're getting the full age grouper experience. That's great.
Yeah, it'll be early.
What will a measure of success be for you at the end of the Olympic Games? how are you going to measure yourself at the end of that race?
Well, I think that there are, what kind of time scales? Like, are we talking about the minute I cross the finish line? Are we talking in 2024, in 2029? Because I think that, like, I'm hoping to have a long career. You never know. But, and so I'm hoping to learn the most I can from this experience.
Yeah.
And if that allows me to have a better performance in 2028, when the Olympics are in LA in on American soil, I might look at it differently, the same place. And also you have to consider kind of going into it, the dynamics of the race and what you do on the day. And so that's a hard question to answer. I'm not sure yet, but.
No, it's a great answer. That's exactly what I was looking for, because it's not, do I win a gold or not? It's, well, there's loads of different things I can take from this, and I might win, but I might finish 50th. But if in learning loads, that helps me win in LA in 8 years time.
Well, that's a big if.
We got to aim high, right?
I guess so.
Hey, well, listen, thank you very much for your time. I've really enjoyed talking with you. Congratulations again. It's amazing to get yourself qualified for the Olympic Games now. Yeah, I wish you all the success in the world going on to Tokyo.
Well, thank you. And thank you for having me on this show.
Okay, great interview with Taylor there. You can really hear the enthusiasm and excitement in her voice. How amazing to be qualified for the Olympics, having not really believed you could get yourself there, racing some of the massive names that they've got on the American squad. So I really look forward to seeing how she goes at the Olympics. I think if she can get herself in a breakaway, you know, people are going to try and shake things up at the Olympics. They always do. If she can get away with Flora Duffy, I don't think people are going to see them before the finish. So we might well be looking at a medalist, if not the gold medalist in Taylor. She's really one to watch, I think. If not for these Olympics, then definitely for the future. She's got a long career ahead of her. So awesome to have her on the show, and hope we can have her back on again in the future. Right, a couple of coaching couch questions for me to cover off this week for you. Things have been going on our Facebook group. We're getting closer and closer to racing, certainly in the UK. We've got first real races of the season happening. We've got Cotswold 113 happening on the 6th, and then we've got Outlaw Half Nottingham happening on the 20th of June. So athletes have got a couple of things going on that I want to talk you through to remind you that this is to be expected and it's not unusual. Firstly, getting into the open water to swim at this time of year. We have had a very cold April and May, unseasonally cold. It's very hard to compare it to last year when it was really, really hot and people were getting in open water. And by this time last year, people were swimming in trunks in open water. It's not the same this year. And people are reporting, you know, I can't even swim for the duration yet for the length of time I'm going to be in there because the water's so cold. So if it's your first open water swim, I'm going to encourage you to do a couple of things. Totally fine to have gloves and booties on when you're swimming at the moment. You might not want to wear them on race day, but use them for your first swim back just to encourage you to, you know, make the water feel a little bit warmer. At the very least, I want you wearing two swim hats when you go into the water. Ideally, get yourself one of the Tier Demetra thermal swim hats that's not made of neoprene. That's great to go on under a swim hat and keeps you nice and warm. Or you can get a sort of neoprene, not balaclava, but one with a chin strap underneath there. That can go a long way to keeping your head warm and to keeping water out of your ears as well. And both these things can make you feel much, much more comfortable and confident. Take a bit of time getting your face used to the water, because something that can feel really unpleasantly cold and unbearable for the first few minutes can often feel much easier after you've had your face in the water for just a few minutes. So spend just a couple of minutes with your face in the water blowing out before you try to do any swimming, and then off you go. Questions we've had about how to train in open water. Well, my advice here is don't overthink this. Replace your endurance swim for the week with your open water swim. And if you do nothing more than just longer intervals than usual in the open water, great. If you've got loops available to you of 400 meters, 500, 750, whatever the loops are, just aim to swim, feel comfortable, get used to being in open water. Don't worry about pace or effort. Just stay relaxed, Feel how the water feels in your wetsuit, especially if it's your first time. Take about a minute after you've done a lap to chill, get your bearings, wipe your goggles, and go again. You don't need to worry about trying to do a structured session when you're in the open water, especially for the first few back. Just get the distance under your belt and get confident that you can swim back in open water again. Again, you've got several weeks for the first races of the season to happen yet, so try and at least get yourself in the open water once before you race is my advice to you. And similarly, getting on your TT bike to go outdoors to train on it, even if you've been training on Zwift in the aero position all through the winter, it is going to feel difficult, uncomfortable, and probably sore in the shoulders, neck, and back for the first couple of rides back. So try and get at least 3 rides done on your TT bike outdoors before you have a race, because you have to get used to holding that position outdoors. You have to get used to essentially how you can hold your head and how you can look with your eyes, not with your head position and neck position as you're riding outdoors. And that's going to take time to get used to. But there's also an element of fitness to your shoulders and your neck being in the kind of constantly tensed, scrunched up position. You have to get used to that. You have to get used to the feeling of going over rough roads, potholes in your aero position. It doesn't feel like being on the turbo, and it'll take you 2 or 3 rides to get used to. So try and get those done before your first race that you care about a lot this year. If you get the chance to do some time trials, great, go and do those. If there's a local sprint or duathlon, great, go and do that. But try and get something done before your first real race that you care about for the season. Again, to stress, even if that's just you getting out on your own and riding in your aero position a few times, that'll really help you get used to it. One of my athletes sent a great video of her through the other day riding on a closed circuit on a TT bike. And she said, my neck's really sore, my shoulders are sore, I'm not sure I'm holding myself in the right position. She looked fantastic. She'd been to see Matt Botterill for Position Fit, and she looks awesome. It's just a question of getting used to it. And it's a question of remembering that how it feels the first 1 or 2 rides back is not necessarily how it's going to feel after the 3rd or 4th ride back. Things will change with time. You've got to have faith that they will, but you've also got to spend the time doing it. So don't be discouraged. I was reading in one of the online forums I used to be an active member of, somebody saying the other day that they're doing Ironman UK and they've been out to do a long ride. And halfway around, he just bailed and said, I hate this. It's raining. My shoulders are sore. I can't hold the aero position. It's a stupid sport. Basically had a big paddy throwing his toys out the pram, which we've all done. We've all been there. But again, there's an element of you needing to accept that you will have low moments when you're out there in training. You will have a time when if somebody offered you 50 quid for your bike, you'd take it and get the bus home. So expect that to happen. If you need to stop and take a break for 5 minutes, that's okay. Get yourself a Mars bar and have a sit down for a few minutes in training. That's okay. And then get back on your bike and finish your ride. Okay. The reason we do this in training is so that we know how to deal with these feelings when they come up actually on race day. So yeah, don't be too disheartened. And the good news is the forecast is looking a little bit better over the coming weeks. So hopefully you're going to get some nice weather to get your rides in. All right then. So that brings us to the end of this week's show. Thanks very much to this week's sponsors, Precision Hydration. Remember, you can use the code OXYGENADDICT15 for 15% off your first electrolyte order. Remember, there's links in the show notes for all of these sponsors, so you don't have to remember them. There's also a link in there that you can book a call with me or the team if you're interested in finding out more about coaching with Team Oxygen Addict. I'd also like to give a personal shout out to my athlete and friend, Tom Crossland. He's going to be starting his run to refuge, his run around England and Wales that we talked about on the show a few weeks back. He's going to be starting this time next week. So Tom, best of luck to you. I know there's lots of people from our community, from our team, who are going to turn up and run with you on various days. If Tom's running near you, I encourage you to look up where he is and go down and find him and go for a run with him and buy him a cup of tea somewhere along the way. It's an epic thing that you're doing, buddy. It's going to be fantastic. You're going to be awesome. 5 years of training have led to this moment. So get out and enjoy every single day. All right. Until next week, I'm Coach Rob Wilby. You've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. Take good care of yourselves. See ya.